Good evening, everybody. If you would, you can go ahead and turn to Genesis chapter 6. We'll be starting there in just a few minutes. We're going to start by reviewing a few slides that we talked about Sunday morning when Wayne was teaching, and then we'll get into quite a bit of material tonight on knowing the flood in Genesis 6 through 9. So, a few of the topics we talked about in chapter 4 was Cain and Abel, and we talked about Cain bringing an offering of the fruit of the ground, and then Abel bringing of the firstborn of his flock, and we talked about how in Hebrews chapter 11 that it talks about his was accepted because of faith, but the Lord did not respect Cain's offering, and Cain got angry and his countenance fell, it says. And then God questions Cain about that, and he says, if you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin lies at the door, and its desire is for you, but you should rule over it. And we're going to see that that's what he didn't do. But it was free will. It was his choice. You know, he could do well or choose not to do well, and he chose the path of sin, and he did not rule over it. He was capable of that, but he lacked self-control, and he murders his brother. And we talked about how his sins multiplied. He didn't do what we should do when we make a mistake, which is to correct it. What he did was, after the wrong sacrifice, you know, he had jealousy issues and anger issues, and he ends up having hatred towards his brother. Then he murders his brother. Then he lies about it, and he was also disrespectful to God in his answer. When God questioned him, of course, God knew exactly what he had done. But when he questions him, he kind of gives attitude back to God about it. And then in Genesis 4:10, God says, what have you done? The voice of your brother's blood cries out for me from the ground. And then he throws a curse on Cain, and he tells him, when you till the ground, it shall no longer yield its strength to you, and you shall be a fugitive and a vagabond. So he's going to be a castaway for how, for committing murder and for sinning. You know, his reaction again to that was one of just unwillingness, no sign of repentance, no sign of asking for forgiveness. It's just one of what seemed to be agitated. And then, like our children do sometimes, when they're punished, the reaction is more about, you know, what are you taking away from me? And what you're hoping to get out of people is that they'll see I've done wrong and they want to make it right, showing that they have the right heart and want to act righteously. And he definitely was one of those cases where he didn't show any repentance at all. Then we got into Genesis chapter 5 talking about the family of Adam. You probably can't see that slide too well. It doesn't really matter. It's not too bad up there. But we'll be getting more of this line tonight, this line that runs through Adam, through Seth, and then down through several others that we talked about in chapter 5. We talked about Enoch, Methuselah, Lamech, and then we get on to Noah, who's our lesson tonight. And again, Cain's line's going to end in the flood that we get into talking about tonight. And as we introduce Christ, we'll be coming through the line that went through Adam, then Seth, and through Noah, who we study tonight. Enoch, as we know from studying all our lives, that uses that phrase, walked with God. He pleased God, and that God took him, as it says there in Genesis 5:22. And then at the very end of that chapter, it introduces Noah there, and it says, and Noah was 500 years old, and Noah begot Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And the years are kind of important if you'll kind of keep in the back of your minds, because when you're trying to, not that all of the years of everything are that important or they would have been told exactly, but you can do a little bit of math to make some educated guesses about how long it was from here to there. And we'll get to a little bit later talking about him being 600 years old when the flood comes. So you can see that was about 100 years after he started having children. Okay, let's get into the lesson tonight. I may have to skip some verses as I'm watching the clock as we move along, but I tried to put a lot of the verses up here so that you can see them if you just want to follow along with the board. So starting with Genesis chapter 6 tonight, it says, "Now it came to pass when men began to multiply on the face of the earth and daughters were born to them, that the sons of God saw the daughters of men, that they were beautiful, and they took wives for themselves of all whom they chose." Continuing on, "And the Lord said, My spirit shall not strive with man forever, for he is indeed flesh, yet his days shall be 120 years. There were giants or tyrants." You may have several different words depending on the translation in your Bible there. Maybe oppressors, maybe Nephilim. There's different words shown there. "But there were giants on the earth in those days, and also afterward when the sons of God came into the daughters of men, and they bore children to them. These were mighty men who were of old, men of renown." So I want to focus on some of that, that really as we're getting into the more important part of this chapter in just a moment, we're talking about men here, these sons of God. And some of you may have thought this in the past or may think this now, but we're not talking about angels here. And God makes the point pretty strongly, not only in the last verse that we read, but another one that we'll read in just a moment. This phrase, sons of God, is translated in other places if you look. It is something that, at least another time, is talking about angels in another place. But like other terms and phrases in the Bible, you have to do your research to see who it's talking about. But Genesis is pretty plain here that we're talking about men. And so we're talking about these men who married women. And then most likely refers to believers in God is really the way I think that we need to look at this right here. They're just those that knew of God going all the way back. You know, a lot of time has passed since what we were studying about in the last week. You know, hundreds and hundreds, maybe even about 1,500 years. That the number of years isn't that important, but, you know, there's a lot more people around than when what we were studying in the last week or so. And at this time here, we're talking about men who came down through, probably through the line of Seth, that knew of God, knew of the Creator and was doing that. And then maybe those that were other lines like Cain or other sons or daughters that it talks about there and other produced other people. Some of them obviously like Cain that got cast away, you know, didn't really know God, and as what we can see as we're moving into chapter 6, that they kind of had no respect for God or didn't acknowledge God or didn't even know God. So it seems that we're talking about men and women, and it just calls them sons of God and daughters of men there. One thing that is brought up here that we, as a lesson for us today, you know, most of us out here are either married or have no plan of marrying anymore this time at our age, but one of the main points that probably needs to be brought up from those few verses is that they were looking at the beauty and not at the heart, and not looking at are these women that I'm going to marry going to help me still do what God wants me to do. And you can tell from everything that we are about to get into right here that obviously these were very bad superficial choices where people ended up choosing spouses based on thinking they were just beautiful and they didn't really care about anything else. And that led to where the story begins that we're talking about tonight. But about that part, you know, if you've been around very long and studying and remembering studying back and maybe some adult classes on Noah and the flood, these first few verses, there are a lot of people that teach some things like saying that these were angels and angels are created like a super race of men and that's why they're giants. But we'll come back to the verses we get to in a few moments, and it's very clearly talking about men that God is angry at and that they're the ones that were sinning and being evil. It has nothing to do with angels. But I did want to bring up that Jesus taught in Matthew chapter 22 that also that angels do not marry. It says there in Matthew 22, verse 30, "For in the resurrection they neither marry nor are given in marriage, but are like the angels of God," meaning that the angels in heaven, that those angels don't marry and they're not given in marriage. That's not what they're about. They're spiritual beings. I titled the next slide, we're getting to destruction is coming. We had already read just a moment ago in verse 3 that God decided that mankind's days are numbered. He said about 120 years. So knowing that and knowing that Noah was 600 years old, that we'll get into tonight, if you keep that number in your head, if man's days are numbered to be 120 more years from where this chapter started, then Noah would have been about 480 years old when God made this determination that he was going to destroy man. Also that God is giving, you know, like, why 120 years or why any time at all if he wants to destroy them? Why didn't he just wipe them out? Well, part of it becomes clear, but part of it is to give him time to prepare the ark. You know, he's just a man. You know, he's got, you know, he'll eventually have his sons to help him and all that right there. But I mean, it is a very huge task to take on, and it was going to take time for him to be able to do what God wanted him to do. 1 Peter 3:20 says, who formerly were disobedient when once the divine long-suffering waited in the days of Noah while the ark was being prepared. So it kind of tells us a little bit more about that we're told in the New Testament. You know, God was long-suffering. Yes, he could have wiped him out there and put his foot down at that time and said, I'm going to wipe him out immediately, but he is going to give time to carry a plan out, and part of his plan is going to be through the ark. Also, in 2 Peter 2 and verse 5, he is giving Noah time to do some preaching. We're told in that verse that, and it says, and did not spare the ancient world, but saved Noah, one of eight people, a preacher of righteousness, bringing in the flood on the world of the ungodly. So we know we're not told a whole lot about that in Genesis, but that Noah was doing some preaching to the people at this time as well. And just again, the 120 years, you might, if you just read through this real quick and just, you know, blowing through that, it might look like we might be talking about this 120 years is talking about the lifespan of man. We've had all of these men living like up to 900 or so years up to now, and it may seem like you that God's saying from now on I've had it with men, so I'm going to cut his years down to 120. But that wasn't the point here. It wasn't talking about the lifespan of man, but how long it was going to be until the flood came. And part of the proof behind that is just knowing what happens after the flood and how long did people live. If you go look at a timeline and spend time, Noah lived another, 350 years and several men still in the 600s. And if you go look at the timeline, it takes quite a bit of time after the flood for men's years to get down to anything approaching 120. But the point seems to be here about God had set a time for the flood to come. And I think I already made this point, but again, the offspring that was talked about in the first four verses produced mighty men, not like angels coming down and producing like some super race of hybrid beings or whatever. That's not the point. The point is about men's wickedness. That's the story that we're getting into tonight. So continuing on in verses 5 and 6, says, then the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And the Lord was sorry that he had made man on the earth, and he was grieved in his heart. Verse 7, the Lord said, I will destroy man whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast, creeping thing and birds of the air, for I am sorry that I have made them. It's a pretty sad set of three verses to read back to back right there. But God is sorry that he made man. Man, going all the way back to where we were studying when we introduced this from the creation, and God seeing that everything was very good, and then the paradise that man had in the garden, you know, how sad of a case to where we've gotten to. And several hundred years later, where God is sorry that he made him, and he is grieved in his heart. And you know that we can relate to this sort of thought when somebody that we love hurts us and doesn't do what we expect out of them, and they don't treat our relationship with any care at all. So it shows, you know, the loving nature of God here. Yes, he's going to destroy them, but he's grieved in his heart over this. Let me stop for a second right there. Are there any comments? That was the first 8 verses of chapter 6. Are there any comments that anybody would like to add there that maybe I overlooked or might have missed that you want to add to that? Anybody else? Okay, so let's continue. In verses 9 and 10 of chapter 6, it says this is the genealogy of Noah. It says Noah was a just man, perfect in his generations. Noah walked with God. We got that phrase again, just like we had with Enoch. We got Noah walked with God. Noah wasn't taken the way that Enoch was. But you remember that phrase that Wayne was teaching us there, that translation, like he pleased God. This is somebody that God saw as just, and he's very happy with him and the way that he is compared to all of these people that have every intent of their heart is to do evil. And it says, and Noah begot 3 sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. So in an evil world, Noah pleased God. And the lesson for us is that it just said that pretty much all of creation, you know, I don't know that it's saying that there was 0 people other than Noah at this day before the flood came, but, you know, they're dying off and people are dying. Pretty much the entire creation that God's talking about has turned their back on God. They don't recognize him as the creator. They're evil. They're getting into all sorts of sinful activity that's driving their whole being. And we can know that based on this right here, something that we can get out of this today is that even though everybody around us is acting evil, if that's the situation we're in, we can still choose to do right. And that's the point for us. Moving forward, verses 11 and 12, the earth also was corrupt before God. He uses this word a lot. And the earth was filled with violence. So God looked upon the earth, and indeed it was corrupt. For all flesh had corrupted their way on the earth. It's a lot of corruption. You know, going all the way back to the garden before sin entered from this paradise, the entire earth has turned into a corrupt flesh. So now Noah receives instructions to build an ark. So let's go over several verses in a row, starting with verse 14. He's commanded to make an ark. It's translated like a box or a barge, kind of describing the shape and what it was supposed to do. You know, like just the way that we picture that there, you know, kind of a very big box or barge that's going to be able to float on the water. It goes on to say use gopher wood specifically. Now, we don't know a lot. People say, well, I think that's this or that. You know, Noah knew what it was, and Noah obeys God's command. We'll find out a little bit later, but he's told to use gopher wood. Then he's told to build rooms in it, also in verse 14. Then to cover it inside and out with pitch, making it waterproof. It's given the length, given in cubits in most translations, but 450 feet long, 75 feet wide, and 45 feet tall. It's a very huge construction project for him and for his sons. And yes, for his son's wife, whoever helped, this was just a massive undertaking to build this just monster sized boat. He's told to prepare a window in verse 16 about a cubit from the roof. He's also instructed to set a door in its side. It's going to be the way they get in and eventually out. And he's told to prepare 3 internal decks inside there, so we'll have 3 levels. So God will destroy all mankind except for Noah's family. Let's read verses 17 and 18. It says, and behold, I myself am bringing floodwaters on the earth to destroy from under heaven all flesh in which is the breath of life. Everything that is on the earth shall die, but I will establish my covenant with you. and you shall go into the ark, you, your sons, your wife, and your son's wife with you. This will give us a little bit. It's not overly important to the story, but based on this here, we can see that some time has passed away from the first few verses already, where he was given 120 years. Again, we're going to know just by reading through this that when the floodwaters come, it's going to be when Noah's 600. Well, now at this time here, we know he had sons at age 500. So that's already 20 years there. And now God's instructing him to take his sons and his sons' wives with him in there. So probably, you know, another, whoever knows how long, 15, 20, 25 years at that time for his sons to have wives with him. So it is speculation. It's not that important to the story, like trying to come up with it. But if you're just trying to play with numbers and that, it may be that it was, you know, 70, 75, 80, 85 years or something like that in the actual making of this humongous project that he had to take on. Again, it's not like he had, you know, thousands of people working on it. This was a project for his family. Okay, then we get into talking about God sparing two of every living thing. Verses 19 through 21, it's told to bring two of every sort of animal, bird, and creeping thing. And it says, with all, every time in this, male and female, that's the two. And then he's commanded to gather and store food for his family and the living things, because they're going to have to eat for whatever time God decided for them to be on the ark. They had to have food to survive, unless God was going to miraculously do it, but he didn't. He told them to gather and store food, so that's what he did. So let's talk about Noah's obedience for just a moment. And display again that phrase, him walking with God, or him pleasing God. And this is another one of those great men of faith that we read about, because he listens to what God says, doesn't argue about what God said, he just does it. Genesis 6:22 says, thus Noah did, after all these instructions, according to all that God commanded him, so he did. So it's complete, total obedience. He did all God commanded him. Again, that as it said there in 6:22, all that God commanded him. That's complete obedience. That's really obedience. Anything less than doing what God said would not have been obedience. I kind of threw this in here just, you know, when I was younger, and I think about this, or even when I've heard atheists or maybe something on TV sometimes talking about the flood, even Christians, I've heard Christians say before something like this, I believe in Jesus, but I don't believe in a ark and a boat and a bunch of animals getting on there and all that right there. That's like a children's story. It's fictional right there. So I just wanted to bring up this point real quick of what Jesus taught his disciples. And you see in Matthew and Luke both. But it says, this is Jesus, but as the days of Noah were, so also will the coming of the Son of Man be. For as in the days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying, given in marriage until the day that Noah entered the ark and did not know until the flood came and took them all away, so will the coming of man be. So if you believe in Jesus, you have no choice but to believe in the ark and the flood and the animals going on there. Jesus himself taught his disciples. This is fact. He wasn't sharing a kid's story. He was telling them, you know, what happened there and the judgment that came on man at that time. And one last point at the bottom of that slide there that we need to remember, you're like, how? That, you know, we use this when I was teaching with Tracy in a class a couple years ago. He used this phrase of, you know, sometimes we make God, or try to make God smaller than what he is right here. And like, you know, almost like he's just a more powerful man. God controls nature. He controlled the animals. We're going to talk about how he led the animals. He didn't send Noah out to hunt for him. He brought the animals to him. He controlled the floods from the great deep. He controlled the rain. He controlled how they were able to survive on this boat that he had them create by hand. God is in control. That's what we can't lose. And all nature is in submission to God. Okay, that's it for chapter 6. Are there any comments or questions about chapter 6? Right. Very good point. And we'll talk about that in just a moment, too. Any other comments that anybody had from what we talked about in chapter 6? Okay, getting into chapter 7, Noah's obedience leads to the saving of his household. Starts out in the first verse of chapter 7, "Then the Lord said to Noah, come into the ark, you and all your household, because I have seen that you are righteous before me in this generation." Verse 4, it tells him the flood's coming in 7 more days. So now we're there. All this time we talked about, we're going to see here that Noah's 600 years old. So when we were talking about him being about 480 years and then him being at 500 when he had sons, well, here we are. God tells him the flood's coming in 7 days. God tells him it will rain for 40 days and 40 nights. And again, he's 600 years old at this point. Now we get into what was just brought up about the clean and the unclean animals and all that right there. You know, we haven't heard anything about that up to now. So it's what God is telling him now. Again, how does he know? Well, we know that it's going to talk about what I have at the bottom of this slide is that God brought the animals to him. We know that there's going to be sacrifices as we get a little bit down there, and God is only going to allow clean animals for that right there. So it's something we haven't really heard about much. It's stuff we know quite a bit about when we get into the law of Moses. But at this time here, it's kind of introduced to him, and he's told to get 7 pairs of each type of clean animals. Again, male and female, that's the pair. There's male and female. 7 pairs of clean animals, pair of each type of unclean animal, male and female, and 7 pairs of each type of bird, male and female. And again, in verse 20, chapter 6, God said they would come to him. He's not out hunting and instead of building and all this time going out and trying to get all over everywhere and trying to find every last animal there. God sends them to him. Already mentioned that right there. You know, obviously Noah has to know what they are. We're not given much information about that. We do know what we're getting into shortly is that he will be having sacrifices to God with the clean animals. And that's why he had more of those, as the point was already made. So 2 by 2, life is spared. This is down in verses 7 through 16. 2 by 2, male and female, man and animal enter the ark. You got Noah and his wife, his 3 sons and their wives, clean and unclean animals, birds, creeping things. Then in verse 16, it says the Lord shuts them in. So you're like, you're sitting there, how's he going to get it closed and all that? God takes care of it. The Lord shuts them in, verse 16. Then, just like God told him, the flood began 7 days later in the second month of the 17th day of Noah's 600 year. Again, they give us these years, and that's how we're able to make some determinations about that and how long the flood lasts and all that. It's all based on the months and the days it gave us in Noah's 600 year and then later in his 601st year. So that's when the floods began. And it's described here in verse 11 that the fountains of the great deep are opened, and also that rain begins and continues for 40 days and 40 nights. That's verses 11 and 12. I took a picture of this and actually blocked out the bottom there because I didn't want to show you Noah's pickup truck that was under there. But this is actually the ark that's up in Kentucky in there. And I only put that slide in there for one reason. And if you ever went up there and saw the size of that ark, I like that just to give you the visual that's sometimes hard to get when people are, you know, just showing you cartoon pictures and stuff. But you know, they did do a lot of speculation and things that they did that what we have no way of knowing. So getting away from all of that stuff up there and how you feel about that, just the vast size of 450 feet by 75 feet by 45 feet is a little bit shocking. If you've never seen it before, once you see it, it's just a monster size. And anyway, I just put that in there. I would suggest, at least if it's not offensive to you, seeing that size up close, you know, it's kind of a faith builder in a way to me, just like it was just getting a better visual representation of what that size looked like to human eyes, because in the story it just sounds big, but it's hard to do that when you actually see that sort of size with your own eyes. It's kind of incredible to witness. Yeah, it's very impressive what was done and how it was able to survive what was obviously a storm like had never been seen and never will be seen again. But eventually the waters cover the earth, as described in chapter 7, 17 through 24. It describes it in these ways here. The waters increased and lifted the ark high above the earth. So the waters lift the ark off of what the stand or whatever he had it on, where it was sitting. It just lifts it up. The ark moves about the surface of the waters, it says in verse 18. And then it says, this is a pretty important point in verse 19, where it says all high hills on the earth were covered. As anything else, if you ever watch any of these religious shows on there, to me, they sound like they're Bible fact shows, if you ever watch many of them, and they're really about disproving or trying to say that it happened in some way that man could do it or something. But a lot of people try to say, well, it was just some local flood that was just right there in that area right there, and it just, you know, it was something very local in that part of the earth. Well, that's not the way that through the Holy Spirit it was revealed to us. All high hills on the earth were covered. And it says the waters prevailed 15 cubits, or about 22 and a half feet above the mountains. So somebody thought they could survive by somehow through the storm. If they thought they could get to the highest point and do whatever, it wasn't going to work. The waters go 15 cubits above the tallest mountains. Everything on earth was destroyed that was outside of that ark, and everything on earth was covered by water. All living things, verses 21 through 23, on the earth were destroyed by God. Only Noah's family and the animals on the ark remained alive, as it said in verse 23. And it says the waters prevailed for 150 days. So for like 5 months, it was to that same point, everything totally immersed and under up to 15 cubits over all the mountains. Any comments or questions on chapter 7 before we move on? Just from my studies there, no. Mr. Waldron made the point of the cycle of water that we know in science, talking about that. But the answer is no, in short. It never describes rain falling or anything else. And you talk about how the plants grow, and it talked about what Wayne was teaching the last couple of weeks about the mist coming up. That is a part of the water cycle. But that's as far as I can go. There's nothing documented. Did anybody else have a comment on that? I mean, not that I know of. Just, of course, we're only in, just introduced chapter 6, and we skipped 1,500 years, so it's not documented. If it was. Okay, well, getting into chapter 8, so now the flood has occurred, and it's been months and months after the flood occurred. God remembers Noah and all the life that is with him on the ark. Starting in chapter 8, it says, then God remembered Noah and every living thing and all the animals that were with him in the ark, and God made a wind to pass over the earth, and the waters subsided. The waters start receding, so 150 days have passed, and the waters are finally going to start receding some. The ark comes to rest on Mount Ararat, says in verse 4, and then it talks about the waters continuing to recede, and it describes the timeline on the first day of the 10th month, in which the tops of the mountains finally could be seen, as described in verse 5. And there's kind of about where Mount Ararat, I guess, is on this map right here. Quickly go through that. So, getting down into verse 6 through 14 in chapter 8, Noah's going to start inspecting for dry land. So it describes 40 days after the tops of those mountains could be seen that Noah sends a raven out through the window that we described earlier. It doesn't return. We don't have any mention of that returning. Mr. Walden talks about that being a stronger bird, but I'm not going to go into anything else. We're not told anything else, but the raven leaves. Next, he sends out a dove down in verse 8 through 9. However, it returns because it found no resting place. And then it says, Noah waited another 7 days, and he sends the dove out again. This time, it says she returns with an olive leaf, and that's described in verse 10 through 11. So now he's knowing that there's some vegetation that the dove has found. Noah knows there's dry ground or no standing water at this point. He waits 7 more days and resends the dove out. She does not return as described in verse 12. Then it says on the first month of the first day of Noah's 601st year, the waters are dried up and Noah removes the covering from the ark. You remember this all, the flood started in the second month on the 17th day. So you have, getting close to a year coming out here at this time. But he removes the covering of the ark, and he could see the dry ground for himself. So in verse 14, it says, in the second month, on the 27th day, the entire earth was dried up. So it's been about a year and 10 days since the flood began. So God commands Noah to vacate the ark with every living thing so that they may abound on the earth, God tells them. And he says, be fruitful and multiply again. Noah immediately worships God, getting to the point that was made about the clean animals. He immediately worships God by offering burnt offerings of the clean animals and birds. Like Abel, he's acting on faith. Verse 20. Then in verse 21, the Lord said in his heart, I will never again curse the ground for man's sake, although the imagination of man's heart is evil from his youth, nor will I again destroy every living thing as I have done. And he goes further with that in chapter 9. Speaking of chapter 9, is there any comments on chapter 8, on what we discussed in chapter 8?
So, you mentioned earlier that some suggest that the flood would bring you on a level. If that was the case, what would be the significance of the promise not to destroy the world from the water? There's plenty of regional flood, there are very destructive regionals, and what we do is definitely.
Yeah, I agree. And like I said, back in that other verse where it talked about all the hills in the earth, so it didn't say in this one area, it said in the earth, in the whole earth. Right, getting into chapter 9, God gives some laws after all this takes place. He tells man again that he's ruler of the animal kingdom. He says animals, birds, and fish will fear and dread you in verse 2. He said, every living thing is given to man for food in verse 3. It's very different now, right? We're talking about man living off plants and tilling the ground. Now he said that every living thing is given to man for food. And, we'll get to that more in the future as this is modified. It'll go back and, it'll be very specific what they could eat that was clean and what they could eat that, or what they could not eat, prohibited what was unclean in the law of Moses. He does make the point you shall not eat the flesh with its blood in verse 4 of chapter 9. I'm going to skip these right now, but we know in the law of Moses and also in Acts, I believe that's from the Jerusalem council right there, that this is repeated. So all through there, God does not want man from this point ever at any time eating flesh with its blood. Verse 9 through 5, there's got to be a settlement required when a life is taken. God says in verse 5, surely for your life blood I will demand a reckoning. From the hand of every beast I will require it, from the hand of every man's brother I will require the life of man. Whoever shed man's blood sheds man's blood. By man his blood shall be shed, for in the image of God he made man. So from this point you're like, well, what about Cain? God decided to spare Cain and cast him out and didn't kill him at that time. But he says right here, you kill a man's going to have to pay for that. If an animal kills, they're going to have to pay for that. Okay, then we get to the rainbow, the sign of his covenant with creation. Some of this we'll pick up Sunday when we're going to get into the Tower of Babel and the scattering of the people, but we'll review back over some of this that I'm rushing at the end. But he says, I set my rainbow in the cloud, and it shall be for the sign of the covenant between me and the earth. And he said in verse 11, never again shall all flesh be cut off by the waters of the flood. Never again shall there be flood to destroy the earth. And then I'm going to skip the Noah curses Ham's descendants tonight. We'll go over that Sunday morning before I start with the chapter 10 and 11. But if you would like to review, then read chapter 10 and chapter 11, and that's what we'll do Sunday, plus a little finish up on what I didn't get to tonight, plus talking about a few of the lessons we can get for this. Appreciate your attention.